Chapter 27. The face of the earth was darkened, and a black rain began to fall. Terrible forces were unleashed on all living creatures during the last ice age. We may deduce how these afflicted humanity from the firm evidence of their consequences for other large species. Often this evidence looks puzzling. As Charles Darwin observed, after visiting South America, no one, I think, can have marveled more at the extinction of species than I have done. When I found in La Plata, Argentina, the tooth of a horse embedded with the remains of Mastodon, Megatherium, Toxodon, and other extinct monsters, which all coexisted at a very late geological period, I was filled with astonishment, for seeing that the horse, since its introduction by the Spaniards in South America, has run wild over the whole country and has increased its numbers at an unparalleled rate, I ask myself what could have so recently exterminated the former horse under conditions of life apparently so favorable? The answer, of course, was the Ice Age. That was what exterminated the former horses of the Americas, and a number of other previously successful mammals. Nor were the extinctions limited to the New World. On the contrary, in different parts of the Earth, for different reasons and at different times, the long epoch of glaciation witnessed several quite distinct episodes of extinction. In all areas, the vast majority of the many destroyed species were lost in the final 7,000 years, from about 15,000 BC down to 8,000 BC. At this stage of our investigation, it is not necessary to establish the specific nature of the climatic, seismic, and geological events linked to the various advances and retreats of the ice sheets which killed off the animals. We might reasonably guess that tidal waves, earthquakes, gigantic windstorms, and the sudden onset and remission of glacial conditions played their parts. But more important, whatever the actual agencies involved, is the stark empirical reality that mass extinctions of animals did take place as a result of the turmoil of the last ice age. This turmoil, as Darwin concluded in his journal, must have shaken the entire framework of the globe. In the New World, for example, more than 70 genera of large mammals became extinct between 15,000 BC and 8,000 BC, including all North American members of seven families and one complete order, the Proboscidea. These staggering losses, involving the violent obliteration of more than 40 million animals, were not spread out evenly over the whole period. On the contrary, the vast majority of the extinctions occurred in just 2,000 years, between 11,000 BC and 9,000 BC. To put this in perspective, during the previous 300,000 years, only about 20 genera had disappeared. The same pattern of late and massive extinctions was repeated across Europe and Asia. Even far-off Australia was not exempt, losing perhaps 19 genera of large vertebrates, not all of them mammals, in a relatively short period of time. Alaska and Siberia, the sudden freeze. The northern regions of Alaska and Siberia appear to have been the worst hit by the murderous upheavals between 13,000 and 11,000 years ago. In a great swathe of death around the edge of the Arctic Circle, the remains of uncountable numbers of large animals have been found, including many carcasses with the flesh still intact, and astonishing quantities of perfectly preserved mammoth tusks. Indeed, in both regions, mammoth carcasses have been thawed to feed sled dogs, and mammoth steaks have featured on restaurant menus in Fairbanks. One authority has commented, "Hundreds of thousands of individuals must have been frozen immediately after death and remained frozen, otherwise the meat and ivory would have spoiled. Some powerful general force was certainly at work to bring this catastrophe about." Dr. Dale Guthrie of the Institute of Arctic Biology has made an interesting point about the sheer variety of animals that flourished in Alaska before the 11th millennium BC. When learning of this exotic mixture of saber-toothed cats, camels, horses, rhinos, asses, deer with gigantic antlers, lions, ferrets, and saiga, one cannot help wondering about the world in which they lived. This great diversity of species, so different from that encountered today, raises the most obvious question. Is it not likely that the rest of the environment was also different? The Alaskan muck in which the remains are embedded is like a fine, dark grey sand. Frozen solid within this mass, in the words of Professor Hibben of the University of New Mexico, lie the twisted parts of animals and trees, intermingled with lenses of ice and layers of peat and mosses. Bison, horses, wolves, bears, lions, whole herds of animals were apparently killed together, overcome by some common power. Such piles of bodies of animals or men simply do not occur by any ordinary natural means. At various levels, stone artifacts have been found, frozen in situ at great depths and in association with Ice Age fauna, which confirms that men were contemporary with extinct animals in Alaska. Throughout the Alaskan mucks also, there is evidence of atmospheric disturbances of unparalleled violence. Mammoth and bison alike were torn and twisted as though by a cosmic hand in godly rage. In one place we can find the foreleg and shoulder of a mammoth, with portions of the flesh and toenails and hair still clinging to the blackened bones. Close by is the neck and skull of a bison, with the vertebrae clinging together with tendons and ligaments and the chitinous covering of the horns intact. There is no mark of knife or cutting instrument, as there would be if human hunters, for example, had been involved. The animals were simply torn apart and scattered over the landscape like things of straw and string, even though some of them weighed several tons. Mixed with piles of bones are trees, also twisted and torn and piled in tangled groups, and the whole is covered with a fine sifting muck, then frozen solid. Much the same picture emerges in Siberia, where catastrophic climatic changes and geological upheavals occurred at around the same time. Here, the frozen mammoth graveyards, mined for their ivory since the Roman era, were still yielding an estimated 20,000 pairs of tusks every decade at the beginning of the 20th century. Once again, some mysterious factor appears to have been at work in bringing about these mass extinctions. With their woolly coats and thick skins, mammoths are generally considered adapted to cold weather, and we are not surprised to come across their remains in Siberia. Harder to explain is the fact that human beings perished alongside them, as well as many other animals that in no sense can be described as cold-adapted species. The northern Siberian plains supported vast numbers of rhinoceroses, antelope, horses, bison, and other herbivorous creatures, while a variety of carnivores, including the saber-toothed cat, preyed upon them. Like the mammoths, these other animals ranged to the extreme north of Siberia, to the shores of the Arctic Ocean, and yet further north to the Lyakhov and New Siberian Islands, only a very short distance from the North Pole. Researchers have confirmed that of the 34 animal species living in Siberia prior to the catastrophes of the 11th millennium BC, including mammoth, giant deer, cave hyena, and cave lions, no less than 28 were adapted only to temperate conditions. In this context, one of the most puzzling aspects of the extinctions, which runs quite contrary to what today's geographical and climatic conditions lead us to expect, is that the further north one goes, the more the mammoth and other remains increase in number. Indeed, some of the New Siberian Islands, well within the Arctic Circle, were described by the explorers who first discovered them as being made up almost entirely of mammoth bones and tusks. The only logical conclusion, as the 19th century French zoologist Georges Cuvier put it, is that this eternal frost did not previously exist in those parts in which the animals were frozen, for they could not have survived in such a temperature. The same instant that these creatures were bereft of life, the country which they inhabited became frozen. There is a great deal of other evidence which suggests that a sudden freeze took place in Siberia during the 11th millennium BC. In his survey of the New Siberian Islands, the Arctic explorer Baron Eduard von Toll found the remains of a saber-toothed tiger and a fruit tree that had been 90 feet tall when it was standing. The tree was well preserved in the permafrost, with its roots and seeds. Green leaves and ripe fruit still clung to its branches. At the present time, the only representative of tree vegetation on the islands is a willow that grows 1 inch high. Equally indicative of the cataclysmic change that took place at the onset of the great cold in Siberia is the food the extinct animals were eating when they perished. The mammoths died suddenly, in intense cold, and in great numbers. Death came so quickly that the swallowed vegetation is yet undigested. Grasses, bluebells, buttercups, tender sedges, and wild beans have been found, yet identifiable and undeteriorated in their mouths and stomachs. Needless to say, such flora does not grow anywhere in Siberia today. Its presence there in the 11th millennium BC compels us to accept that the region had a pleasant and productive climate, one that was temperate or even warm. Why the end of the last ice age in other parts of the world should have been the beginning of fatal winter in this former paradise is a question we shall postpone until part 8. What is certain, however, is that at some point between 12,000 to 13,000 years ago, a destroying frost descended with horrifying speed upon Siberia and has never relaxed its grip. In an eerie echo of the Avestic traditions, a land which had previously enjoyed 7 months of summer was converted almost overnight into a land of ice and snow with 10 months of harsh and frozen winter. 1,000 Krakatoas all at once. Many of the myths of cataclysm speak of times of terrible cold, of darkened skies, of black, burning, bituminous rain. For centuries, it must have been like that, all the way across the Arc of Death, incorporating immense tracts of Siberia, the Yukon, and Alaska. Here, interspersed in the muck depths, and sometimes through the very piles of bones and tusks themselves, are layers of volcanic ash. There is no doubt that coincidental with the extinctions, there were volcanic eruptions of tremendous proportions. There is a remarkable amount of evidence of excessive volcanism during the decline of the Wisconsin ice cap. Far to the south of the frozen Alaskan mucks, thousands of prehistoric animals and plants were mired all at once in the famous La Brea tar pits of Los Angeles. Among the creatures unearthed were bison, horses, camels, sloths, mammoths, mastodons, and at least 700 saber-toothed tigers. A disarticulated human skeleton was also found, completely enveloped in bitumen, mingled with the bones of an extinct species of vulture. In general, the La Brea remains, broken, mashed, contorted, and mixed in a most heterogeneous mass, speak eloquently of a sudden and dreadful volcanic cataclysm. Similar finds of typical late Ice Age birds and mammals have been unearthed from asphalt at two other locations in California, Carpinteria and McKittrick. In the San Pedro Valley, mastodon skeletons were discovered still standing upright, engulfed in great heaps of volcanic ash and sand. Fossils from the glacial Lake Floristan in Colorado and from Oregon's John Day Basin were also excavated from tombs of volcanic ash. Although the tremendous eruption that created such mass graves may have been at their most intense during the last days of the Wisconsin, they appear to have been recurrent throughout much of the Ice Age, not only in North America, but in Central and South America, in the North Atlantic, in continental Asia, and in Japan. It is difficult to imagine what this widespread volcanism might have meant for people living in those strange and terrible times. But those who recall the cauliflower-shaped clouds of dust, smoke and ash ejected into the upper atmosphere by the eruption of Mount St. Helens in 1980 will appreciate that a large number of such explosions, occurring sequentially over a sustained period at different points around the globe, would not only have had devastating local effects, but would have caused a severe deterioration in the world's climate. Mount St. Helens spat out an estimated 1 cubic kilometer of rock and was small-scale by comparison with the typical volcanism of the Ice Age. A more representative impression would be the Indonesian volcano Krakatoa, which erupted in 1883 with such violence that more than 36,000 people were killed, and the explosion was heard 3,000 miles away. From the epicenter in the Sunda Strait, tsunamis 100 feet high roared across the Java Sea and the Indian Ocean, carrying steamships miles inland and causing flooding as far away as East Africa and the western coasts of the Americas. 18 cubic kilometers of rock and vast quantities of ash and dust were pumped into the upper atmosphere. Skies all over the world were noticeably darker for more than 2 years, and sunsets notably redder. Average global temperatures fell measurably during this period because volcanic dust particles reflect the sun's rays back into space. During the episodes of intense volcanism which characterized the Ice Age, we must envisage not one, but many Krakatoas. The combined effect would at first have been a great intensification of glacial conditions, as the light of the sun was cut by the boiling dust clouds, and as already low temperatures plummeted even further. Volcanoes also inject enormous volumes of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere, and carbon dioxide is a greenhouse gas, so it is reasonable to suppose, as the dust began to settle during periods of relative calm, that a degree of global warming would have occurred. A number of authorities attribute the repeated advances and retreats of the great ice sheets to precisely this seesaw interaction between volcanism and climate. Global flooding. Geologists agree that by 8000 BC, the great Wisconsin and Würm ice caps had retreated. The Ice Age was over. However, the 7000 years prior to that date had witnessed climatic and geological turbulence on a scale that was almost unimaginable. Lurching from cataclysm to disaster and from misfortune to calamity, the few scattered tribes of surviving humans must have led lives of constant terror and confusion. There would have been periods of quiescence when they might have hoped that the worst was over. While the melting of the giant glaciers continued, however, these episodes of tranquility would have been punctuated again and again by violent floods. Moreover, sections of the Earth's crust, hitherto pressed down into the asthenosphere by billions of tons of ice, would have been liberated by the thaw and begun to rise again, sometimes rapidly, causing devastating earthquakes and filling the air with terrible noise. Some times were much worse than others. The bulk of the animal extinctions took place between 11,000 BC and 9,000 BC, when there were violent and unexplained fluctuations of climate. In the words of geologist John Imbrie, a climatic revolution took place around 11,000 years ago. There were also greatly increased rates of sedimentation and an abrupt temperature increase of 6 to 10 degrees centigrade in the surface waters of the Atlantic Ocean. Another turbulent episode, again accompanied by mass extinctions, took place between 15,000 BC and 13,000 BC. We heard in the previous chapter that the Tazewell advance brought the ice sheets to their maximum extent around 17,000 years ago, and that a dramatic and prolonged thaw then ensued, completely deglaciating millions of square miles of North America and Europe in less than 2,000 years. There were some anomalies. All of western Alaska, the Yukon Territory in Canada, and most of Siberia, including the New Siberian Islands, now among the coldest parts of the world, remained unglaciated until the Ice Age was near its end, They acquired their present climate only about 12,000 years ago, apparently very abruptly, when the mammoths and other large mammals were frozen in their tracks. Elsewhere, the picture was different. Most of Europe was buried under ice 2 miles thick. So too was most of North America, where the ice cap had spread from centres near Hudson Bay to enshroud all of eastern Canada, New England, and much of the Midwest down to the 37th parallel, well to the south of Cincinnati in the Mississippi Valley, and more than halfway to the equator. At its peak, 17,000 years ago, it is calculated that the total ice volume covering the northern hemisphere was in the region of 6 million cubic miles. And of course, there were extensive glaciations in the southern hemisphere too, as we noted. The surplus water flow from which these numerous ice caps were formed had been provided by the world's seas and oceans, which were then about 400 feet lower than they are today. It was at this moment that the pendulum of climate swung violently in the opposite direction. The great meltdown began so suddenly, and over such vast areas, that it has been described as a sort of miracle. Geologists refer to it as the Bolling phase of warm climate in Europe and as the Brady interstadial in North America. In both regions, an ice cap that may have taken 40,000 years to develop disappeared for the most part in 2000. It must be obvious that this could not have been the result of gradually acting climatic factors usually called upon to explain ice ages. The rapidity of the deglaciation suggests that some extraordinary factor was affecting the climate. The dates suggest that this factor first made itself felt about 16,500 years ago, that it had destroyed most, perhaps three-quarters of the glaciers by 2,000 years later, and that the vast bulk of these dramatic developments took place in a millennium or less. Inevitably, the first consequence was a precipitous rise in sea levels, perhaps as much as 350 feet. Islands and land bridges disappeared, and vast sections of low-lying continental coastline were submerged. From time to time, great tidal waves rose up to engulf higher land as well. They ebbed away, but in the process left unmistakable traces of their presence. In the United States, Ice Age marine features are present along the Gulf Coast east of the Mississippi River, in some places at altitudes that may exceed 200 feet. In bogs covering glacial deposits in Michigan, skeletons of two whales were discovered. In Georgia, marine deposits occur at altitudes of 160 feet, and in northern Florida at altitudes of at least 240 feet. In Texas, well to the south of the farthest extents of the Wisconsin glaciation, the remains of Ice Age land mammals are found in marine deposits. Another marine deposit containing walrus, seals, and at least five genera of whales overlies the seaboard of the northeastern states and the Arctic coast of Canada. In many areas along the Pacific coast of North America, Ice Age marine deposits extend more than 200 miles inland. The bones of a whale have been found north of Lake Ontario, about 440 feet above sea level. A skeleton of another whale in Vermont, more than 500 feet above sea level, and another in the Montreal-Quebec area, about 600 feet above sea level. Flood myths from all over the world characteristically and recurrently describe scenes when humans and animals flee the rising tides and take refuge on mountaintops. The fossil record confirms that this did indeed happen during the melting of the ice sheets, and that the mountains were not always high enough to save the refugees from disaster. For example, fissures in the rocks on the tops of isolated hills in central France are filled with what is known as osseous breccia, consisting of the splintered bones of mammoths, woolly rhinoceroses, and other animals. The 1,430 feet peak of Mount Genet in Burgundy is capped by a breccia containing remains of mammoth, reindeer, horse, and other animals. Much further south, so too is the Rock of Gibraltar, where a human molar and some flints worked by Paleolithic man were discovered among the animal bones. Hippo remains, together with mammoth, rhinoceros, horse, bear, bison, wolf, and lion, have been found in England in the neighbourhood of Plymouth on the Channel. The hills around Palermo in Sicily disclosed an extraordinary quantity of bones of hippopotami in complete hecatombs. On the basis of this and other evidence, Joseph Prestwich, formerly professor of geology at Oxford University, concluded that Central Europe, England, and the Mediterranean islands of Corsica, Sardinia, and Sicily were all completely submerged on several occasions during the rapid melting of the ice sheets. The animals naturally retreated as the waters advanced deeper into the hills until they found themselves embayed. They thronged together in vast multitudes, crushing into the more accessible caves until overtaken by the waters and destroyed. Rocky debris and large blocks from the sides of the hills were hurled down by the currents of water, crushing and smashing the bones. Certain communities of early man must have suffered in this general catastrophe. It is probable that similar flood disasters occurred in China at much the same time. In caves near Peking, bones of mammoths and buffaloes have been found in association with human skeletal remains. A number of authorities attribute the violent intermingling of mammoth carcasses with splintered and broken trees in Siberia to a great tidal wave that uprooted forests and buried the tangle of carnage in a flood of mud. In the polar region, this froze solid and has preserved the evidence in permafrost to the present. All over South America, too, Ice Age fossils have been unearthed, in which incongruous animal types, carnivores and herbivores, are mixed promiscuously with human bones. No less significant is the association over truly widespread areas of fossilized land and sea creatures mingled in no order and yet entombed in the same geological horizon. North America was also badly affected by flooding. As the great Wisconsin ice sheets melted, they created huge but temporary lakes, which filled up with incredible speed, drowning everything in their paths, then drained away in a few hundred years. Lake Agassiz, for example, the largest glacial lake in the New World, once occupied an area of 110,000 square miles, covering large parts of what are now Manitoba, Ontario, Saskatchewan in Canada, and North Dakota and Minnesota in the United States. Remarkably, it endured for less than a millennium, indicating a catastrophically sudden episode of melting and flooding followed by a period of quiescence. A token of good faith. It was long believed that human beings did not reach the New World until around 11,000 years ago, but recent finds have steadily pushed that horizon back. Stone implements dating to 25,000 BC have been identified by Canadian researchers in the Old Crow Basin in the Yukon Territory of Alaska. In South America, as far south as Peru and Tierra del Fuego, human remains and artifacts have been found, which have been reliably dated to 12,000 BC, with another group between 19,000 BC and 23,000 BC. With this and other evidence taken into account, a very reasonable conclusion on the peopling of the Americas is that it began at least 35,000 years ago, but may well have included waves of immigrants at later dates too. Those newly arriving Ice Age Americans, trekking in from Siberia across the Bering land bridge, would have faced the most appalling conditions between 17,000 and 10,000 years ago. It was then that the Wisconsin glaciers, all at once, went into their ferocious meltdown, forcing a 350-foot rise in global sea levels amid scenes of unprecedented climatic and geological turmoil. For 7,000 years of human experience, earthquakes, volcanic eruptions, and immense floods, interspersed with eerie periods of peace, must have dominated the day-to-day lives of the New World peoples. Perhaps this is why so many of their myths speak with such conviction of fire and floods and times of darkness and of the creation and destruction of suns. Moreover, as we've heard, the myths of the New World are not in this respect isolated from those of the old. All around the globe, a remarkable uniformity reveals itself over issues such as the Great Flood and the Great Cold and the time of the Great Upheaval. It is not just that the same experiences are being recounted again and again. That on its own would be quite understandable since the Ice Age and its after effects were global phenomena. More curious by far is the way in which the same symbolic motifs keep recurring. The one good man and his family, the warning given by a god, the seeds of all living things saved, the survival ship, the enclosure against the cold, the trunk of a tree in which the progenitors of future humanity hide themselves, the birds and other creatures released after the flood to find land, and so on. Isn't it also odd that so many of the myths turn out to contain descriptions of figures like Quetzalcoatl and Viracocha, said to have come in the time of darkness, after the flood, to teach architecture, astronomy, science, and the rule of law to the scattered and devastated tribes of survivors? Who were these civilizing heroes? Were they figments of the primitive imagination? Or gods? Or men? If they were men, could they have tampered with the myths in some way, turning them into vehicles for transporting knowledge through time? Such notions seem fanciful. But as we shall hear in Part 5, astronomical data of a disturbingly accurate and scientific nature turns up repeatedly in certain myths as time-worn and as universal in their distribution as those of the Great Flood. Where did their scientific content come from?